Welcome to Weekly Insights at Winthrop Capital Management, where we discuss recent developments currently shaping the markets and industries in the global economy. Here's your host, Chief Investment Officer Greg Hahn.
Well, good morning, everyone. Happy Monday. I'm Greg Hahn, Chief Investment Officer for Winthrop Capital Management, and with me again is Adam Kunz, Head of Trading and helps with portfolio management as well. Adam, good morning.
Good morning.
All right. This morning, we got to cover a little bit more history. We keep making history in this pandemic, and then we'll cover an update on the five stocks that we talked about to weather the storm and how those are doing. And then cover updates to our models and credit markets. And I think it's a pretty short agenda, actually, this morning, Adam.
Yep.
Let me kick it off with the Fed's announcement. So remember, we're living through two experiments, the pandemic, surviving the pandemic with an economy that's partially shut down. And then secondly is an experiment in the use of aggressive monetary policy that started back in the financial crisis in 2008 with the Fed using its balance sheet to manipulate the yield curve, lower interest rates, and then ultimately impacting the price of risk in the capital markets because the Fed's directly involved. So with those two experiments, the Fed announced last week that they effectively would let inflation run above the 2% target and now use the 2% really as an average. Now remember, the Fed has a dual mandate, which is to promote maximum employment and also maintain price stability, when those are code words for get people back to work so we can grow, we get job growth and grow the economy while maintaining the rate of inflation at a level the Fed deems appropriate. So the Fed would love to get inflation up to 2%, but even in economic expansions, we struggled to get to that 2% level. The concern I think the Fed has is that that becomes normalized, that it's acceptable to have an average rate of inflation below that 2% level. And what they're really trying to do is to start to manage expectations that we want to really get it above that 2%. Now, whether they can actually do it or not, especially with parts of the economy shut down, I think remains to be seen. But the big unknown goes back to the experiments is the impact that the aggressive monetary policy has on inflation. Long-term inflation remains to be seen. But right now, 15 million people out of work. The unemployment rate is near 10.2%. So it's it went from the best employment market at the end of the year to one of the worst employment markets in history because of the pandemic. So we estimate that 5%, almost 10% of the economy was shut down. But on a net basis, we're down $19 trillion. In gross domestic product or gross domestic output, excuse me. So it's a massive impact on the economy right now. So going forward, what we're looking for, this goes back to the financial crisis. We're looking for sustained economic growth, which we define as economic growth without support of government fiscal or monetary policy. And the economy can't grow without fiscal stimulus. So that's kind of the next level is I think the equity markets, we're about to transition into stocks. The equity markets are really relying on the next round of government stimulus to help support the economy. And we're at that crossroads. We talked about this last week. We're at an inflection point where a lot of workers are off government support. They don't have the checks coming in to help make rent payments, buy groceries. So they're using credit cards, skipping rent payments. And we're starting to see that come through the numbers. And it's if we don't have government assistance, we'll probably see the consumer pull back again and it'll come through the numbers. We'll see the economy start to contract again. Any other thoughts on that, Adam?
No, I mean, I guess the only other thing is that you saw savings rate drop from, it was spiked, what, at 25%. So it just came out last week, savings rate is now back down to 10%. So you see that kind of cushion that consumers built into their balance sheet is now gone again.
Yeah, and the cruel impact this is having is really on savers, people who are retired that are trying to earn a level of income off of their retirement savings. And the market's really giving us nothing. But we did see a pop in interest rates a little bit last week. You want to talk about that with the news?
Yeah. So like I said, with the Fed coming out, the market kind of reacted with this fear, in quotes, of inflation. So rates across the long end of the curve widened 9 basis points on Thursday, right after the meeting. But then really conversely on Friday, it was a quiet day. You saw rates kind of start to drift back down. So they gave up almost half of that. But overall rates were higher last week. And credit spreads really did much of nothing. And it was funny that Bloomberg came out with an article that, over the past summer, 75% of primary issuance is trading, at least 5 basis points tighter of issue, whereas the secondary market generally is unchanged during that time period. So you can see really everyone's just playing that new issue market.
Yep.
It's the place to be. So otherwise, still the street balance sheet is light. They're not willing to take on risk.
I'm going to tee this up for you. But when you look at the price appreciation on some of these stocks like Apple, Amazon, Google, and you look at the debt levels they have, when you measure the debt to total equity, given the price appreciation, these debt levels are really, really small.
These
have to be upgrade candidates.
Absolutely. I mean, Apple's a great example is their debt hasn't really gone up at all over the past year, yet their market cap has doubled. So you went from $1 trillion company to $2 trillion,
right?
With the same $100 million of debt.
Right. And they have a bond portfolio.
They have a bond portfolio. They have more cash than they have debt.
Right.
So it's just, it's a different world.
Right. So these in 20 years ago, technology companies in the credit markets, technology companies were a little scary because they didn't have assets and their revenue wasn't predictable.
Yeah.
Because it was a lot of semiconductors and Intel. And but now this is a whole new breed of company. And I do see this as some of these companies could be the new standard for AAA, which, you know, the AAA rating pretty much went away during the financial crisis because that was our banking sector.
Yeah.
So you want to update us on our top five?
So back in April, April 6th, actually, we put out a list of stocks to weather the COVID storm. So we're obviously coming right out of the March lows. And so our list at that point was Amazon, Johnson & Johnson, Microsoft, Lockheed Martin, and Alphabet/Google. So just to kind of recap there. So Amazon, year to date, up 84%. And really a company that's firing on all cylinders, whether you're looking at cloud business, which is up double digit, your online shopping, or even Whole Foods for that matter, really all of their segments are working. So far, over this past year, they've created $24 billion in earnings. They've seen revenue grow 30%. So once again, in this bifurcated market where you're seeing companies that are, you know, going out of business and revenue declines, you've got companies like Amazon that are actually seeing substantial revenue increases. Now, on the flip side of that, valuations have obviously become slightly stretched, to say the least. Trading at 55 times earnings and 5 times sales, Amazon is by no means a cheap stock.
Nope.
You have any thoughts on Amazon?
Well, so a couple of things. One is that they continue to invest in infrastructure, including their truck.
Yep.
And as well as their warehouse logistics. So that's going to take up CapEx. One of my life goals is to watch every Alfred Hitchcock movie. So I was on Amazon Prime last night with Kate watching To Catch a Thief with Princess Kelly. So my daughter turns to me and she goes, "Who did she marry?" And I said, "Well, the prince." So she didn't believe that Princess Kelly was really a princess. And so we kind of backtracked it. And so after she made that movie, she was 26 years old. She married Prince Rainier when she was 27. So anyway, great, great movie. So are you on Amazon Prime?
I am. Yeah.
So the part of the problem was they had a real slow traction in getting Amazon Prime launched. But I'm imagining that the pandemic has helped to accelerate.
Yeah, I've seen both on the music and the video. The viewership is up threefold in both segments. So yeah, staying at home has forced people to change their habits and what they look at. I mean, part of it is the fact that you're running out of shows on Netflix. So what do? You go, what's Amazon got, right?
Yeah.
Classics. Yeah. Secondly, Johnson & Johnson. So this was a more defensive play, really coming out of, like I said, March. We wanted to play some defense here, but we felt like with their broad portfolio of both healthcare and some consumer goods, Johnson & Johnson was well positioned. They did come out at the end of July with some positive preclinical data on their COVID vaccine. So they've got several different drugs they're testing there. And then most recently, they acquired Momenta for $6.5 billion, which is an autoimmune disease drug maker. We think this is a really good acquisition. It's immediately accretive. And that autoimmune segment is really a fast-growing part of biotech. So we like the acquisition. And, you know, even still, Johnson & Johnson is just trading at 16 times earnings. So, yeah.
And we do expect it to be a player in the COVID vaccine world, because they did enter into a contract through their one of their subsidiaries at the beginning of August to deliver 100 million doses of a COVID vaccine to the U.S. government. So,
yeah, everything's looking promising there. And, you know, on top of all of that, they're still generating $15 billion in earnings and $17.5 billion of free cash flow is our projection here in 2020. So still a defensive play, but with plenty of upside if they come out with a vaccine. Switching to Microsoft, you know, it's kind of hard to say anything bad about Microsoft. They brilliantly made the acquisition of Teams back in 2018. A lot of people questioned it back then, and I think it's proven to be.
We live on it.
Right. So just to give context, in July of 2019, there were 13 million daily active users for Teams. As of the end of July or end of April of 2020, they came out with their numbers. It was 75 million. So in less than a year, that is substantial growth, which really shouldn't surprise anyone. I know there's a lot of talk in the news about them potentially buying TikTok and who they might partner up with. We're kind of hesitant on whether they really move forward with that. And honestly, getting that approved by the U.S. and Chinese government, to me, is a very low likelihood.
Yeah.
But overall, just the move to working from home has just been a tremendous boost to Microsoft, which is up 46% year to date. Lockheed Martin was another one. This is the one out of the five that has lagged the market generally. It is up 2.89% in 2020. And really the investor hesitance towards aerospace and defense came from this idea that as the budget deficit grows, that someplace had to give and that defense budgets might take a hit. Now, with that said, what was it, last week, they won a $62 billion contract for F-16s across many different countries.
Yep.
And then one thing I'm really paying a lot of attention to is the UAE signed their treaty with Israel, which should open up F-35 production for the UAE. And the U.S. has said that they want to provide technology to the UAE. And so I think that's the next contract in the pipeline and honestly why Lockheed really should continue to perform.
I'm stunned if you read the news how Russia is aggressive towards U.S. Air Force flying in international space.
And yeah, that B-52.
That's a recurring issue when they do those flybys so close to our guys doing exercises. But I don't see I don't see military de-escalating right now.
Nor do I.
I think each country, China, led by China and Russia, is stockpiling. The growth in both the Chinese and Russian military has been astounding over the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Not going away. We'll wrap it up on the stocks. Alphabet is at 42% year-to-date. And you've seen cloud grow in that 40% range, as well as their play has grown 35%, just more of that people staying at home, playing more games, you know, just consuming more content. Like I said, Alphabet now has acquired Fitbit for $121 billion in the last few weeks. And then most recently took a stake in ADT's home automation. So this really supports the Nest segment and just, you know, Alphabet, they have a ton of cash and they continue to try to find places to invest to grow.
And this has been a theme that we've had for several years is how to invest in home automation. And if you think about it, you've got devices that control your air conditioning, your lights, your exterior lights, your sprinkler system, a number of different gadgets in the home. And how do you centralize that? And there's a company called Crestron, which is a private company. So not investable, that really owns the office market. But to do it at the home, really the whole, it was really Alphabet and Amazon to the extent with Alexa.
Yeah.
What Alphabet did with Google Home. So it looks like they could really take a big step into home automation.
Yeah, totally agree.
Could be monetized.
So that's just an update on the five stocks that we outlined back at the beginning of April. So far, so good, and really no changes we would make to those weathering going forward. Across models, just really quickly, last week we talked about how we're adding to the equal weight ETF. So that is an ETF that's underperformed. You've seen small caps generally underperform, down 4.5% year to date versus the S&P, which is now up 10% year to date. So overall, you're seeing, we believe that kind of, we don't want to call it a reversion to mean, but as we see those lower cap, smaller stocks recover, we wanted to make that play as ticker RSP, equal weight on the S&P 500.
And one of the things we need to do this week for some of the financial advisors that we work with have asked about this, this equal weighted index. And what we want to show is the level of idiosyncratic risk that exists in the S&P 500, as well as in specific sectors, because of the high concentration now in the dominance of these large cap stocks in the different sectors. Really, they don't have the diversity that they used to have, which causes a different level of risk that we have to be able to manage around, especially in a recovery. When if we assume that we get to a point in the economic recovery, these stocks that have been hit will recover faster than the tech stocks will, and if we're not positioned, we won't capture that.
Yep.
if we're just passive in the current suite of subsector indices and in the broad S&P 500.
Yep, totally agree.
All right, well, with that, anything else you have?
Nothing for me.
So next week we've got the Kentucky Derby, and we're watching the U.S. Open. All without fans. So we are still working through the sporting environment where we don't get to go and watch live. Yeah. And so that's kind of surreal. And then we've got Labor Day next weekend. So we're going to push to Tuesday.
Okay.
Yep. for this next call. So you guys have a great week, and we'll talk to you next Tuesday. Thank you.
Thanks.
All investments are subject to risk, including the possible loss of the money you invest. The information presented in this podcast is intended for educational purposes only and does not take into consideration your personal circumstances or other factors that may be important in making investment decisions. You may access and download this podcast only for your personal and non-commercial use. You may not use it in any other manner or for any other purpose without Winthrop's written permission. Copyright 2020, Winthrop Capital Management, LLC. All rights reserved.